Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for July 7th, 2015. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and today I'm talking with Joachim Herz and Courtney Lane Donovan about how a secreted protein called reelin helps protect neurons from the toxicity of amyloid beta. Amyloid beta is a fragment of the amyloid precursor protein that can aggregate inside cells. It's a major component of the amyloid plaques that are present in the brains of patients with Alzheimer's disease. Amyloid plaques are toxic to neurons, so their presence causes neurodegeneration, which can affect learning and memory. In a new study, Joachim Herz and Courtney Lane Donovan have found that a secreted protein called reelin normally helps protect the brain from the neurotoxic effects of amyloid beta. Herz and Lane Donovan spoke to me from the University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center in Dallas. Dr. Lane Donovan, Dr. Herz, welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast.
Hi, Annalisa. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, hi, Annalisa. Good to see you again.
Why is the accumulation of amyloid beta toxic to neurons?
Amyloid beta is one of the cleavage products of the amyloid precursor protein, also called APP. APP and several of its cleavage products have roles in the brain that are related to synaptic formation and function. But a role of A-beta itself is currently undetermined and hotly debated. Some groups suggest that it plays a role in normal synaptic function, but other people think that it's just a waste product that the brain doesn't even need. A-beta forms oligomers in the brain, which are toxic to neurons, and these oligomers can then deposit into the characteristic plaques of the disease. A-beta, it's thought to cause disease through a couple of pathways, but one of the key ones that we study is its effects on synaptic function.
Plaques that contain amyloid beta, or A-beta, are found in the brains of patients with Alzheimer's disease. Does A-beta accumulation cause Alzheimer's, or is it merely associated with the disease?
So A-beta definitely plays a role in Alzheimer's disease. Mutations in three of the genes that affect amyloid formation, the amyloid precursor protein, presenilin 1 and 2, all cause increased levels of amyloid beta production, which lead to a devastating early onset form of Alzheimer's. And additionally, amyloid beta deposition is the central hallmark of Alzheimer's disease. So the diagnosis actually requires the amyloid to be present. What is less clear is how exactly the amyloid beta deposition leads to loss of brain mass. The accumulation of plaques doesn't actually correlate with the disease, so some people will have high levels of plaque, but will be cognitively normal, whereas other individuals will have relatively low plaque accumulation but still be cognitively impaired. And so a key question is how this impairment is caused, and it appears that tau aggregation is what's required for the actual neuronal death and disease. And a key unresolved question is how we get from amyloid deposition to the tau hyperphosphorylation that causes neuronal death. However, we know that amyloid beta also plays its own role in cognitive impairment by impairing synaptic function without necessarily killing the neuron. And this is early stage of synaptic dysfunction and cognitive impairment caused by amyloid beta, that's where reelin and APOE receptors play a central role in protecting against the amyloid beta. Amyloid beta leads to the removal of synaptic components by dephosphorylation, while reelin performs the opposite role of phosphorylating these components.
What is reelin?
So reelin is this really large and complex protein that's made up of several domains that interact with various binding partners. These include the APOE receptors, as well as members of the FB family and possibly integrins. And this is probably not even a complete list. So reelin was first recognized for its role in controlling brain development and lamination, where it regulates the migration of newborn neurons. And nature took advantage of this developmental pathway in the adult by using it to regulate synaptic function. In the adult, reelin selectively strengthens synapses, and in this manner enhances synaptic plasticity. And this is in direct contrast to what A-beta does, which is reducing synaptic plasticity.
So what Courtney just laid out very nicely is this, how nature has evolved a regulatory mechanism in which reelin functions as an endogenous defense molecule against the synaptic suppression, which is induced by amyloid when it starts to accumulate in the brain. So one can look at reelin as a protector of cognition, which can do a pretty good job as long as amyloid levels are low, but once amyloid levels are accumulating, at some point this protective system gets overwhelmed and synapses are weakening.
Is the expression of reelin induced upon accumulation of A-beta, or is reelin just always around and it's recruited to help protect neurons against A-beta damage?
Ghrelin is a normal signaling molecule that's always around in the brain. And from what we are beginning to understand, what it is doing is it's regulating the abundance of glutamate receptors at the synapse. So essentially, it forms kind of a rheostat which adjusts the sensitivity of the synapse and making sure that the synapse is functioning always within its optimal bandwidth. And when ghrelin becomes impaired, either by the knockout which we have performed here or because neurons are being lost as Alzheimer's disease is progressing, then this regulation, this protection of normal synaptic function is breaking down, and ultimately amyloid as it's accumulating in the brain is taking over, and ghrelin can no longer defend the neuron and the synapse against this onslaught of A-beta.
You used conditional knockouts to knock out ghrelin specifically in adults. So after ghrelin had already performed its function during development, you removed ghrelin function in adults. What happens cognitively to those mice?
We found that the mice which lacked expression of adult ghrelin, they were mostly normal in the behavioral tests that we looked at. So on learning and memory tests, they performed similarly. They did have a mild hypoanxiety emerge through time, but it was pretty mild. And you know, this modest phenotype, it's unsurprising. So 15 to 20% of the population has APOE4, which is the primary risk factor for late onset Alzheimer's disease. And we've previously shown that this possession of APOE4 causes neurons to be resistant to ghrelin signaling. And so, you know, 15 to 20% of the population is fairly normal and resistant to ghrelin. And so it's not surprising necessarily that these mice were normal. However, when we looked at their brains and we actually looked at synaptic function, we observed an enhancement in long-term potentiation, which would suggest that the ghrelin conditional knockouts do have a change in brain function. And moreover, when we crossed these mice with mice that overproduced amyloid beta, a mouse model of Alzheimer's disease, we observed a striking impairment on the mice. So once they had just a little bit of A-beta in their brain, the mice were completely impaired on a learning and memory task. And so our findings really suggest that while the brain can compensate for ghrelin loss in a normal situation, once ghrelin is gone, the brain is completely susceptible to amyloid beta.
Does ghrelin reverse the accumulation of A-beta, or does it just protect the neurons from being damaged by that accumulation?
So our results showed that at least at the age that we looked at, loss of ghrelin didn't change the accumulation of A-beta. It just caused the neurons to be more susceptible to the A-beta toxicity. And so we really think that ghrelin is an intrinsic defense mechanism against the amyloid beta effects on these components of the synapse.
It can protect the synapses for a time, but then once amyloid beta accumulation is severe, then it no longer offers enough protection.
Yeah, so amyloid is actually inducing dephosphorylation of synaptic components. And when that happens, then these synaptic components are preferentially endocytosed. They're lost from the synapse. And that means the synapse is losing ion channels, and now the nerve conductance is actually impaired. Synapses are weakened. And as it turns out, what ghrelin is doing exactly the opposite. Ghrelin is activating kinases, which put phosphate groups on these glutamate receptors and keep them, therefore, in the synapse. So ghrelin is strengthening the synapse. Now, this is a natural, normal balance, and obviously any balance can only be upheld to a certain level at some point when one side overwhelms the other one, like in this case, in the case of Alzheimer's, amyloid is activating phosphatases or otherwise damaging the synapse to such a great extent that ghrelin can no longer effectively protect against this. Then all these mechanisms are breaking down and the synapse withers away despite the best efforts ghrelin can put up in keeping the synapse functional.
Have any mutations in ghrelin been identified in humans associated with either increased susceptibility to developing Alzheimer's or protection against developing Alzheimer's?
So yes, actually there have been some SNPs identified in patients that I talked about earlier who have really high levels of plaque that are cognitively normal. And so a study found that some individuals that are like this actually have SNPs in ghrelin that probably make them more likely to upregulate ghrelin in response to amyloid. However, more follow-up is needed.
So ghrelin can help protect against some of the damaging effects of the accumulation of A-beta. Did you try restoring renal function in knockouts that had already accumulated a lot of A-beta and had suffered some cognitive impairment? If you restore renal function later, can it reverse any of those phenotypes?
So we have not actually tried this experiment, but we do think that it would restore function. This is actually because another group published about a year ago a study in which they overexpressed renal in another model of Alzheimer's disease that's a little more severe, and they rescued the cognitive impairment that those mice had.
When we first actually came across this mechanism, I thought the same way intuitively, but now we have a way of enhancing synaptic function, so this would be a great pill for increased cognition if we could upregulate the system. But that is actually too simple a model. So what renal is doing is, as I explained earlier, is to regulate the amount of neurotransmitter receptors in the synapse to keep them actually at the optimal level. And from that model, actually, it implies that when you're now providing too much renin, okay, this is not actually going to do a good thing either. Yes, it will upregulate the glutamate receptors, and whatever synapses are being strengthened at the time an animal is learning a particular task, those synapses will be cemented in place, so to say. So the animal will not forget what it has learned at the time when renin levels were high. However, this animal will also have a hard time forgetting this and then learn new stuff because there's only a limited number of synapses around. So plasticity, meaning the strengthening of synapses and the loosening of synapses, is intrinsically necessary to keep the learning abilities of the brain at an optimal level.
Joachim and Courtney, thanks for speaking with me.
It was a pleasure.
You're welcome. It was great.
That was Joachim Herz and Courtney Lane Donovan discussing a paper published in the July 7th issue of Science Signaling by Lane Donovan and colleagues. You can read that article online at stke.sciencemag.org. The Science Signaling Podcast is a production of Science Signaling and the American Association for the Advancement of Science, advancing science, serving society. If you have any comments or questions, you can write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and AAAS, thanks for listening.